Welcome to Wrestling with Heart, a podcast looking at pro wrestlers giving back to their community. Join me, Stanley Carr, as I interview wrestling's hottest names who use their platforms as entertainers to raise awareness and do community service.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Wrestling with Heart. This is the show where we talk with professional wrestlers and professional wrestling personalities about their lives in and outside of the ring, as well as doing acts of charity work, community service, volunteering, and spreading the positivity. We're always about the positive vibes here on the show, and I've got a very special guest with me today. He is an ECW original, former World Heavyweight Champion, former Hardcore Champion with the WWE. I'm talking about the one and only Justin Credible. Justin, welcome to Wrestling with Heart.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. The pleasure's all mine. So you're from Waterbury, Connecticut. Tell me about your upbringing and kind of what got you into wrestling.
It's up in the Northeast, typical blue collar town. Grew up really, like a normal kid. I played sports and stuff, but I always was a huge fan of pro wrestling. There's just something about, the pageantry, just all of it, everything that went along with pro wrestling. I just really loved that. And, when I graduated high school, I already knew that's kind of what I wanted to do. I didn't go on to college. I just kind of went right into pro wrestling at a very young age, and I got very fortunate. It was the rise of the WWE golden era, so to speak. I remember, I'm going back a long time, but I just remember it was only like, I'm 50, so we had we still had a black and white TV. We had the main color TV in the family room, but this is when TVs were really expensive still. So I had I don't know if you remember, like the rabbit ears and antennas, and I could catch a couple of local channels. And I remember I watched Hulk Hogan pinning the Iron Sheik for the WWF title, the WWF at the time title. And that's kind of the start of Hulkamania and all that is what really got me.
Yeah, it seems like that's around the time it was hot,
the 80s. It first started to pick up, so absolutely.
Perfect time to get into it. And becoming a wrestler, obviously, it's a lot of work, a lot of discipline. You got to kind of have to get, physically fit. What's your story like? Tell me how, the training process was for you.
It was in this day and age, especially, I graduated high school in 91. And if you recall, in the WWF at the time, it was the land of giants. I mean, I remember going to, I didn't go to many shows, but I went to a couple of shows. And I mean, these guys were 6'3", 260 pounds. I mean, they were monsters. They're just big, enormous guys. I'd never seen anything like that. I mean, they looked big on TV, but in person, I swear they were even bigger. Very intimidating. And I was not a big guy. I was maybe 6 feet tall and maybe 220 pounds, which is big today, which is weird. It's considered big today, but back then it was not. Very few guys, I think like Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Owen Hart, and myself were like some of the smaller guys in the WWF in 94. So, it goes to show you how that changed. But so training was just like, just work out as hard as you can, lift as much weight as you can, and eat as much as you can. It was not as finessed, and it was not as scientific as it is today, so to speak. It was just, just lift and eat, kind of a thing.
Yeah, you definitely have to get in the right frame of mind when you're becoming a professional wrestler. Like I said, physically fit and work out as many times as possible. So you started on the independent circuit and you made your way to the WWE in the mid 90s. You had a character called, was it Alto Montoya?
Yes. Yeah. Aldo Montoya, the Portuguese man of war, for sure.
Who came up with that character?
All right. So believe it or not, this is the way I got my, it's a fascinating story. I think it's fascinating. I live in Waterbury, Connecticut, like you mentioned early on, and 40 miles west of me, of Waterbury, is Stamford, Connecticut, which is the home base of in the offices of the WWE. So I had been doing some work as an extra for WWE, and they literally called me and said, look, would you be interested in coming to our TV studios over there? We're going to set up a ring, and we're going to be doing some training. So they were going to train this guy. They were doing SummerSlam 1994. They were training this guy to do the original Undertaker versus an imitation Undertaker for SummerSlam. It was like an evil Undertaker against the real Undertaker. So basically, they wanted to train this guy up so he knew how to wrestle like the Undertaker, and you know, the whole dress rehearsal thing for Vince McMahon at the time. So during that entire week, I was there working out with these guys, just, you know, putting in 4 or 5 hour days, you know, going through the motions, just trying to figure out, you know, train to do this, to help this guy through this process, which was great. And, you know, it worked out. But during that process, I got to really, you know, be there and kind of show off my skills. So Pat Patterson, who was the head of, you know, kind of really booking the storylines and doing all that stuff, the head writer, what you guys call today, we call him a booker. He asked me, you know, what nationality are you? And I said, well, I'm Portuguese. And then, you know, hey, Vince, this guy's Portuguese. You believe that? And I was like, well, that's kind of weird. You know, okay. And he kept asking me questions after questions. And lo and behold, they had this character, Aldo Montoya, the Portuguese man of war, for a while. They just needed a Portuguese guy that could speak the language, which I can. And that was actually Portuguese, because they wanted to do this character to go over to Europe and to another Portuguese speaking country, which was Brazil. And, you know, and they wanted to go into these markets, and they had this character in mind. So again, it was really being at the right place at the right time. And that's how it all kind of got started.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like that whole new generation era, that mid-90s period, yeah, was full of characters.
For sure. Some weren't so great, but they were definitely trying to do something, you know?
Yeah, got to try things. Always have to try things out, see what sticks. And definitely there were some during that period of time, and especially later on when you get into the Attitude Era, that definitely stuck and were memorable to this day. People still talk about
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was fantastic. The Attitude Era was crazy.
Now, ECW, you were like one of the original members of that promotion, made your debut in 1997. What made you decide to go to ECW and leaving the WWE?
At the time, you know, I really enjoyed Aldo. You have to understand, I was a very young man. I was in my, you know, I was 21, 22 years old. You know, and I had wrestled for the WWE since 93, like late 93 to 97. And in that time period, almost 4 years, I felt like I'd outgrown Aldo, and I was ready to kind of, you know, I was an underneath guy. I was a mid-level to underneath guy. I understood that, and that's kind of the way it should be. I was learning the ropes, but I felt like I'd gotten to a point where, you know, I need to kind of grow, and I outgrew the character, and I certainly outgrew the push. You know, I wanted to do more. So I got a meeting with Vince McMahon, and I expressed that. And this was around the time Scott Hall, who was a good personal friend of mine, and Kevin Nash was also a good friend of mine. They went to WCW to do the NWO. And I knew that those guys, you know, they were always like, you know, we can get you a job down here. We can, you know, get you in the NWO, something like that. Mm-hmm. So I went to Vince, and I asked Vince for my release. You know, which was, again, they weren't doing anything with me. I thought for sure Vince would say yes. And then I could just kind of go and, you know, expand and explore my, you know, another character, just do, you know, just do something else. I thought it was time. And Vince said no, which kind of surprised me. And I was like, okay. And he suggested, cause I still had like a year left on my deal, that I go to Memphis, Tennessee, which is Jerry the King Lawler's small territory promotion. If you ever watched the show The Young Rock, mm-hmm. right around the same time where Rocky was down there, I was down there too. I remember Rock was down there at that time. So I went down there around that time because he wanted me to be a heel and learn how to work as a heel. So I went down there. I was down there for about 8 weeks, worked with a lot of people down there, and a lot of good people. And but anyways, at the end of the day, Paul Heyman, Tommy Dreamer, RVD, Sabu, were down in Sandman. We're down there doing the ECW gimmick, like ECW versus Jerry the King Lawler's WWF guys. You know, they were doing this angle for ECW. And I got to meet with Paul Heyman and those guys. And, you know, Paul had gotten and took a liking to me and to my work. And so basically, long story short, he negotiated with Vince to have me go to ECW and work for ECW. And the rest is kind of history.
Yeah, I mean, ECW was like this renegade promotion, this hardcore wrestling, Smash Mouth, really pioneered so many elements that we see today in professional wrestling, kind of led the birth to the Attitude Era,
For sure.
along with what WCW was doing at the time with the NWO, just kind of, really ushering in this new era of professional
Yeah.
wrestling.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was well, you know, it was time for a change. Wrestling had grown very stale. If you remember, WCW was doing, horrible matches with like Hulk Hogan against Kevin Sullivan's Dungeon of Doom. And those are horrible. And WWE again was doing, just bad stuff. It was very cookie cutter, very, almost cartoonish. And ECW was the furthest thing from it. It was hardcore, not just in the style, but also in the storylines. The kind of music we were coming out to, cool music. The music of the day, hardcore, like rock and roll or hip hop. We were super cool, where those other guys were just like lame, and people started to recognize, like, what the hell is going on? Like, and again, that's when the Attitude Era and Scott and Kevin with their, they just, everybody started to kind of ramp up the cool factor, and went that route. And obviously that's when it all took off, and all three promotions, and you could say they kind of caught the Attitude Era was really kind of ECW's idea, which I think it was, but that's whatever. But it was just a change in, a drastic change in what they were doing, what everybody was doing, really.
Yeah, it seemed like all promotions were thriving. And with ECW, you had just an amazing group of talent. You
Oh
mentioned
yeah.
music earlier. Guys like Rob Van Dam came out to Pantera,
Right.
Sandman came out to Metallica. You had all this really, it was cutting edge.
Yeah.
You, it
Yeah.
really,
And
it
when it
really
was, and
was.
again, to hear to hear that music in these arenas. I mean, we had to stay, like, if you went to a WCW event or a WWE event, the music wasn't like, it is today. If you went to house shows, a lot of it was just glorified PA work, where we had like a nightclub DJ pumping through these huge sounds and entrance musics in these arenas, where you can really hear the, it was just captivating. It was never done like that before. Now, of course, the arenas are different, much more state of the art, so the sound is better. But back then, believe it or not, you're gonna think I'm full of shit. Sometimes, man, in the WWE, especially for European tours, we had a boom box with a cassette, and they would put the microphone to it, and that's how you'd hear the wrestler's entrance music. That's how lame it was.
Wow.
Yeah, and WCW too, because it wasn't what you think it is. All these arenas were kind of outdated, unless you were doing TV tapings, then you had the trucks, and we brought in our own sound. But when you did house shows, it was very bare bones. You didn't have all the monitors and lights and stuff. You just had the ring and the lights above, and it was very old school. Where the ECW and Heyman figured out the music, its vibe, and to hear like cool music pumping through, and it starts, it's shaking the building, and you hear Enter Sandman, and the lights are off. It's like, what the hell, man? It was super dope and way ahead of its time. And now that's just how it's done today.
It's definitely has changed so much
For sure.
since that era, since that time period. But you've wrestled so many people throughout your career. Who have been some of your favorite opponents to work with over the years?
Oh, God. Let's see. I mean, definitely Tommy Dreamer, for sure. The Sandman, Shane Douglas, Sabu. Those are definitely some of my favorites. Jerry Lynn, legendary feud with him. Let me see. And even in the WWE side, who did I like to work with in the WWE? I mean, I had great matches with CM Punk in the 2006 era when he first broke in to Vince's ECW. Who else? Jeez, I mean, I had good matches with everybody. I'd say those guys, though, for sure, were some of my favorites.
I remember that match that you had with Punk. Who would have thought that he would have become the big star that he is now?
It's wild.
Unbelievable.
And I remember him after the match. He was so grateful. He was actually in tears thanking me because it went much better, I guess, than he had expected. And the office, the WWE office, was very grateful and very, very happy. I remember that he was very humble and very, very appreciative. You know, it was good to me. I always loved Punk. We always got along. He was a good dude to me.
Yeah. And it's really fascinating to me when I go back and I watch all these old shows. You were briefly a part of the ECW revival. What was your thoughts on it?
At first, the first couple of the first pay-per-view especially was a home run. I was a part of it. It was very good. The second one, I was there and I just came out at the end. It was already, this was right before it went into the full-time Vince version of ECW. I could already tell it was being littered and polluted by the WWE guys. And then, you know, doing the debut for CM Punk and, you know, and then I think I wrestled him again the following week. I think we did promos and then I asked him for a rematch and then I did the job for him again. And I put over Balls Mahoney. I put over Sabu. I just was putting over everybody and the money was really shitty to boot. So shortly after that, I signed in 2005, I signed. And I left, I think, at the end of 2006 because it was horrible. The money was bad. And I was killing my whatever credibility, no pun intended, that I had gained from being a superstar in ECW. And I knew they really didn't have any intention of doing anything with me. So, yeah, it was just brutal.
Yeah. As great as ECW was, I don't think you could ever recapture that feeling that you had in the 90s.
No. And then the reason being, too, is what made ECW so special was we were against the establishment. We were counterculture. You know, we were the rebels. Now we're working for the guys we were always talking shit about. You know what I mean? We're working for Vince. It just didn't fit what we were about. We were, if they wanted it to work, they should have completely left it alone. They should have given Paul a budget and let Paul run it the way he ran it before. It was literally intertwined with their television companies and with the office. It was just, again, the same. It was more like working for WWE. They just called it something else. The politics were the same. The bullshit was the same. It wasn't ECW. And if they wanted it to truly succeed, which I know Vince could never do this, he could not, his ego is just ridiculous. He could not let it go. He should have said, hey, Paul, here's $10 million, run ECW, or whatever the figure would be. And, then that would have worked. This way it would not have worked.
Let's switch gears now. Let's talk about some of the charity work and community service work that you've done. You've done a lot of philanthropy over the years. What were some of the organizations that you've worked with over the years?
We did a lot of stuff with the WWE, where you do wishes, what's it called?
The Make-A-Wish
Foundation, yes. Through the WWE, we've done a lot of stuff with Make-A-Wish. You know, that was a big one, and we didn't get to pick and choose. But I just remember Sue Etchison, who was one of the main people in WWE that took care of that, always had me going at least once a month to Make-A-Wish here in Connecticut, especially. So I did a lot of stuff there, and also in my own community, I do stuff to this day, feeding the homeless here in my hometown through the church and stuff. So you know, I always tried to. To give back, you know, as much as you can, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to put a smile on someone's faces, especially somebody that can't afford food or water. And
Yeah.
how long have you been doing that?
Oh God, since I was probably 21, you know, not as much. And to be honest, in full disclosure, I don't do as much today as I used to, only because, you know, I just not in the position to the way I was in the WWE, nor am I necessarily asked for to do it through those Make-A-Wish foundations. But again, in my local community through the church, I always do something, you know, more of a hometown thing, though, for sure.
Was there like a particular moment, while, you know, whether it was Make-A-Wish or feeding the homeless, was there a particular story that really touched your heart when it came to helping someone out?
It was mostly just the kids, and having them come to the shows and having them see you backstage right before you go out and really seeing the look in their eyes, you know, and how grateful they are to be there in that moment, and making them feel special that you can kind of give to them. That's always amazing and special, for
Yeah,
sure.
it definitely is, especially somebody that may be going through a hard time or somebody's
Yeah,
sick.
for sure. Yeah. 100%, for real.
Why do you feel passionate about helping out in your community?
I just think it's always good to give back, right? To give to others. I mean, it's, you know, I've been down and out as well. And, you know, and it's amazing when you're down and out, you almost feel like there's nobody there for you. If you can help, there's all, you know, even though you may not feel like you're doing as much as you should or could, it means a lot. It means a lot. As little as you can help or as much as you can help means the world to people that don't have as much as you.
Outside of wrestling, what else are you doing? Do you have like a wrestling school? Or are you training new?
No, I don't do much of anything with wrestling right now. I mean, I do podcasting. I do autograph signings, but right now I'm just working as a chef in a little kitchen here in my local town, and work full-time job, man. That's it.
That's a pretty cool job to have, you know, serving
A lot
people
of work,
and
brother.
yeah, I'd imagine.
A lot of work, but
Was
it's
it
fun. I love it. I always have. I always have. I've been doing this for a long time now, so it's a lot of fun.
Do people recognize you when they come
Oh,
into
yeah.
the...
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Not as much as before, but most people do, especially the staff, you know, always got to bust your balls.
They'll just look up old YouTube clips
Oh,
of you wrestling.
Yeah, you can imagine. So that's
ECW.
pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, listen, Justin, this has been amazing getting the chance to speak with you today. I want to say thank you. It means a lot to me, to my listeners and viewers that are watching this on YouTube. Do you have anything that you want to promote or plug? Where can people find you if they want to
Sure.
get in touch with you?
Just, you know, the typical, follow me both on Twitter and on Instagram, at PJ Polacco. And of course, also on TikTok at PJ Polacco. And that's basically it, man. If you would like any one of my t-shirts, I have over 20 designs. Go on over to Pro Wrestling Tees, TEES.com/Justin Credible. And that's about it, man.
All right. Well, Justin, again, thank you so much. And you're more than welcome to come back.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure, sir.
All right. Have a good one.
This is Wrestling with Heart. I hope you found this podcast to be informative and entertaining. If you did, please hit the subscribe button and look out for the next edition.